one good looking fan. And any barmaid can be a star mate if she dances with or without a fan. Hooray for Hollywood! When you're terrific if you're even good. Where anyone at all from Shirley Temple to Amy Semple is equally understood. Go out and try your luck. You may be gone or luck.
All right, I'm a little out of practice here and missed my button cues. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to a Rattlegem Broadcasting premiere podcast, Damn You Hollywood. And here's your host, Robert Winfrey. Yay!
Yep, it's me, coming to you entirely too early on a Tuesday morning. For the record, we're recording this at noon Eastern, which is 10 in the morning my time, and normally I don't even wake up until about 30 minutes from now. But that's because my life is a train wreck. Tonight on Damn You Hollywood, we are talking about the latest adaptation of Roald Dahl's novel The Witches. This was released direct to HBO Max in the very immediate past, and because we're all kind of desperate to do things that don't involve the same people in the same spaces, we all got together to talk about this one. So joining me on this episode, first, you heard him kind of mush mouth and lisp his way through the intro because he's got all the issues. Just any possible problem you could have with your mouth, he's got them. Mark Rattledge. Mark, how are you doing?
I cannot wait for the end of November. They say by the end of November, the left side of my jaw should be relatively healed.
Or they'll have to remove it.
Yeah, at this point, I wish they would.
Yeah, just one more thing to go wrong. sorry to hear that. I do hope that you power through that infection.
Yeah, it's on the left side of my jaw. It's just healing from surgery of having the wisdom tooth removed. The right side of my face has a mouth infection, which extends all the way to my lip, which is why I sound like I have a speech impediment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hopefully that gets cleared up in the near future. I imagine you're on a pretty healthy, antibiotic routine.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I eat these days.
Well, I hope you're enjoying a lot of chocolate pudding.
Yeah.
To bring that back around to another Bill Cosby reference. All right, also joining us, a Roald Dahl enthusiast and a fairly regular contributing member of the podcast family, Alexis Haina from Honeysuckle Rose Creations. How you doing, Alexis?
Doing good. Removing my gloves, removing my shoes, removing my wig.
Fair enough.
Someone has to make that joke.
Yeah, but if you're not going to do it with Anne Hathaway's ridiculous Norwegian accent, then it just kind of falls flat.
Every time I try to do a crazy accent, Mark asks if I'm having a stroke.
Yeah, he does that. All right, so, Mark, again, this came together we'd always kind of talked about this being on the schedule, but it got a little bit kind of kerfluffled after, everything. And then when it announced it was going straight to streaming, we just kind of figured, okay, you and I both kind of mutually agreed to cancel our planned comic strip for The Empty Man. That was supposed to record, today in the evening.
Sounds so heartbroken over that.
I can't tell you how relieved I am after that trailer dropped. So, Mark, any particular reason we decided to go with this? There was just kind of enough general interest and we had space on the schedule, or...
Yeah.
You don't particularly... which is just to ask... Do you in particular have a passion for the works of Roald Dahl and their various adaptations?
No. It's funny, actually. My daughter has a collection of Roald Dahl books. This actually wasn't one of them. but I'm realizing that a lot of what he's written that got adapted into movies, I either haven't seen or don't have any interest in. I think the only one is like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
About which the less said of Tim Burton's movie, the better.
I was going to say, Tim Burton's or the classic Gene Wilder, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I've seen both.
Okay.
Man, Dahl hated Gene Wilder version, which doesn't really boggle my mind, considering how many of the adaptations of his work he did not like. He did not like the changes they made. Didn't like the musical numbers from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Didn't even really like Gene Wilder's casting. Which I think is just objectively wrong. Wilder was wonderful.
Well, there's also the fact of how much he hated the 90s version of The Witches, to the fact that when he passed on, in his will, he actually left very specific instructions about any further adaptations of his work.
Yeah, The Witches one in particular, I don't mind going into this just a little bit. He fought with the director and one of the other screenwriters over, in particular for the 90s version of The Witches, his big gripe, as most of us I think have with that particular movie, was the ending. They threw a slapdash, everyone gets the best possible ending thing into that for no reason other than studio notes, basically. The director actually shot a version that was more in line with the ending of the book, and apparently it was quite well done. He just decided between the director and the studio that now we're not going to have a even slightly downer ending with this poor mousified kid not being able to get back to normal. That's too dark.
The notes that I read said that it was test audiences didn't like the book accurate depressing ending. So that was what I read, is why they changed it.
That almost certainly plays a role, I'm sure, which just goes to show how you can't trust test audiences. That's the only problem I have with the 90s version, is that they shoehorn in this ridiculous ending where everything works out for no reason other than typical Hollywood BS. So that does lead us to this particular adaptation. So, Alexis, you're a bit of a Roald Dahl aficionado. Before we get into the movie proper, I suppose the right way to phrase this, you know, the 90s adaptation has a lot of very good stuff to it. What were you looking for in a more modern retelling of that story?
Well, The Witches is probably my second favorite Roald Dahl book of all time. My favorite babysitter when I was little, so remember her name, Lainey Grayson, used to read me The Witches when she took care of me, and she'd read it to me before I went to bed. And I remember telling somebody this, and they looked at me and said, "Wow, that actually explains so much." I'm like, "Yeah, I know, right?" So what I was looking for was, I wanted it to, again, stay faithful to the book. I felt that the 90s one stayed fairly faithful until, studio mandated ending. So I said flat out, I was like, if they give this thing a happy ending, I am going to be so pissed. Which I know sounds so weird. But I knew that there was obviously going to be a lot of updates. The 90s film was known for its very impressive practical effects done by Jim Henson. This one, we knew we were going to get CGI, obviously, but I still wanted it to be good CGI.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Intermittently.
Yeah. I didn't want, like I said, we all knew it was going to be entirely CGI, and I still wanted it to be good. I wanted to see how they handled the witches, if they had changed anything else from there. I was just very intrigued to see, especially Anne Hathaway followed up with Angelica Houston's performance. Because I think we can all agree, for the 90s version, no matter what we argue about the end or anything, Angelica Houston is playing the Grand High Witch. That was one of her just greatest roles. especially for the fact that how long she probably had to stay in that incredible full body makeup.
Yeah, she's talked about that a little bit in the past, about how she was under all those lights in this full, like upper torso rubber, because it is foam rubber, get up, and the line she's saying, losing all meaning, just, I'm reciting lines to get out of this thing, because it took like 6 hours to apply and about 6 hours to get off.
And again, we knew that they weren't going to do that. They were obviously going to go with CGI. But I'm sorry, going, you know what? Okay, if they're going with CGI, they're going with CGI, obviously. But that can still work. As long as they put enough time and effort into it to make it still look really good and still have it leave an impact. For the record, I think we're all in agreement that, yeah, this was supposed to not only get a theatrical film, it was supposed to be in 3D.
That's painfully obvious as this movie goes on.
Yeah, especially the scene where she's stretching out her hands. Oh my god, that was actually when I first saw it, that kind of, I was like, what the hell is she bending her arms for? But the more you look at it, that's actually a very creepy effect. I kind of liked how she's bending her arms like one of those old Microsoft screensavers.
Yeah, there's definitely... they spent all their money on that effect, so they had to use it twice. For the record, yeah, I do agree about Angelica Houston. The only thing I mean, there's a couple of things I would probably put above her turn as the Grand High Witch, but not a lot. I mean, the only one that I very clearly off the top of my head would put over it would be her turn, both of her turns as Morticia. Because I don't know how you potentially even begin to recast that if you were to do it live after she, after what she did with that role. Alright, let's jump into the plot of this thing. In typical Roald Dahl fashion, we meet our protagonist child as they're, in this case, a boy, as his parents have just died in a car crash. Childhood tragedy is a staple of Dahl's work.
Seatbelts save lives.
They do. His parents have just died in a tragic car accident. He winds up in the care of his grandmother, played by Octavia Spencer. And she's a little bit of a... how do I say this? Little bit of a voodoo priestess. You know, not over the top, but she engages in a little bit, you know, a little bit of the mystical side of things, a little bit of... backwoods, you know, kind of healing and whatnot, so she's aware of the existence of witches, doesn't go out of her way to tell her grandchild this until he encounters one. He's also given a pet mouse that he names Daisy, that we later find out used to be a little girl named Mary, and is voiced by Kristen Chenoweth first voices her. I was trying to figure out where this kid looked familiar to me, and I finally figured it out. He looks like the black kid in Stranger Things. It's not the same actor, but I wonder if they're not brothers. So, they go along to get away from the witch. They send the grandmother and grandson go to a very fancy hotel that one of her nephews used to be the head chef at this restaurant, so he kind of hooks them up.
This takes place in the 1960s, and obviously we've got Octavia Spencer and her grandson who are black, and it's clear that they're probably going to be the only black guests at this hotel, especially since we do see the pretty much the entire staff, with the exception of the hotel manager.
The hotel manager and the new head cook are both white. There's a slightly amusing sequence in the kitchen where it's pretty obvious that the head chef is just ad-libbing. As we're kind of following the boy who's become moused at that point. He's just there making noise and insulting the kitchen staff to kind of distract everyone from what's going on.
I did like that. Like, that is a shrimp. I need my prawns.
Only in butter. Oh, now there's a grease fire. Yeah. So they go to this hotel to try and get away from the witch, to take some time to, you know, relax. Only to discover that they've booked themselves into the same hotel that is hosting the annual Conference of Witches, led by the Grand High Witch Anne Hathaway, who is having entirely too much fun in this role. As per the story, the kid and one of the other kids he runs into at the hotel both wind up victims of the witches. In this case, they're turned into mice. They escape from the Grand High Witch, who tries to kill them. They reconvene with the grandmother. They come up with a plan to use the witch's potions for turning people into mice against them. They dump it into the soup that's going to the witches at their at one of their big events. All the witches except the Grand High Witch partake in the soup, are turned into rats. We get a final confrontation between the Grand High Witch and all of our protagonists. They wind up turning her into a rat, and then her own cat kills her. All of our group go on a prolonged voyage of ridding the world of witches, because now they have not only a gob ton of money that they stole from the Grand High Witch, but the list of all witches everywhere in the world in terms of names and addresses. The whole thing is narrated by Chris Rock, who takes over as the voice of the boy who does not become a boy again. He stays a mouse. And it just ends as they're recruiting a bunch of children to go commit murder all around the world. But we get kind of the appropriate ending. And there's a few things that, you know, we can kind of kick around after that, but it's a very straightforward plot. So, Alexis, I'll let you go first, then, to kind of save us all from the sound of Mark's speech impediment.
All right, well, can we all agree that, yes, Anne Hathaway has clearly been watching Leonardo DiCaprio lessons on how to chew the hell out of the scenery?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's clear she took this role because she was told, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Yep, go ham.
Yeah, she has got the crazy German accent. And, oh my god, she is just screaming and growling and throwing her hands all over the place. And I'm not a huge Anne Hathaway fan. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything and I've gone, oh god, blah. But she is just so much fun to watch this. And I am so glad she went with this performance. It is the only way that this could have worked, and I love it.
She lightning bolts a witch that asks a question, and then immediately as she descends back to the stage from her levitating pose, goes, that was a good question, insubordinate though it was.
I like the update also. That there's a couple of changes from the books on the witches themselves. The biggest one is their mouths. In the book, in this movie, the witches, if you've seen the trailers, you've seen that someone here doesn't know how to turn their cell phone off. In the movies, you see that all the witches have what look like little lines on their mouths. Well, it's because their mouths split open like snakes. They have like wider jaws. And you know what the CGI does? It looks a little cheesy in a couple of the faraway shots, but the close-up shots when Hathaway's talking and growling, I think they look pretty decent.
Yeah, personally, there's bits and parts where the CGI works, and there's bits where it doesn't. A lot of the closer-up stuff with their mouths does look pretty good. Mm-hmm. Some of the times when she's floating around, it looks stupid. Any time she demonstrates her strength and, like, chucks something unreasonably heavy across, it just looks bad. When she throws the stage at one point, it's a little bit, yeah. The really awful one for me was right at the end when she throws the headboard of her bed. It just looks so horribly unnatural and stiff.
It was a weird-looking effect.
It's just awful. The mice look okay in terms of the CGI. But this thing was very clearly meant to be a 3D feature, and that always comes with perils and pitfalls. I think the only sequence that actually would have benefited from the 3D technology is when our heroes as mice are trying to escape down this air vent away from the Grand High Witch, and she's extending her arms to attack them. And I think that sequence in 3D might have looked more impressive than it did not. But other than that, there's not a whole lot that isn't just kind of the stupid stereotypical, oh, look, it's coming out of the screen at you. Ah.
And the mouse roller coaster would have been kind of cute to see in 3D.
Yeah, I don't need a 3D roller coaster. If I want a roller coaster, I'll go on a roller coaster.
When's the last time you went on a roller coaster?
Not that long. I don't know. 18 months, maybe? 2 years?
I don't know. I just have this image in my head of you never once going on a roller coaster in your life.
Yeah, I like roller coasters. So, yeah, that's kind of my two cents there. The performances are all right. Again, Hathaway just chews scenery like it's going out of style. Octavia Spencer is serviceable. The kid, I don't know if he's just more of a voice actor in general, but if he was told the whole time you're, as a boy, you should be very non-memorable, and then as soon as you turn into a mouse, you actually, your performance comes to life.
Yeah, I did notice that. I mean, the kid actor is not bad at all. You know, he doesn't have any emotionally major scenes, but his voice acting is quite good. He has a lot of energy. He gives his mouse version a lot of character.
Yeah, his mouse version is more memorable than his non-mouse version. I do kind of wonder if that wasn't at least partially a choice by the the director or whatnot, because this is directed by Robert Zemeckis. If this wasn't a choice to try and make it seem like, yeah, he's a bit more comfortable as a mouse, so it's not as tragic that he can't become a boy again.
Although that was part of the book. There's a whole chapter, well, not a whole chapter, but like half a chapter after the boy is transformed where he actually goes through and his head is like, okay, focus on the positives. What's a good thing about being a mouse? And he actually kind of comes to, it's like, you know, I don't think I've got it that bad now.
Apart from the drastically shortened lifespan.
Which I'm kind of surprised they addressed in this film, because they entirely erased that for the 90s version, that this mouse has this child comes to terms with his own mortality, with the fact that he's going to die around the same age as his grandmother.
Yeah, that again, that's one of the things that they wanted to avoid in the 90s version. And for, I tend to think, overly borderline stupid reasons. Mark, I know talking is painful for you, so we're doing a lot of the heavy lifting here, but you mentioned you haven't really read the book. Have you seen the original adaptation? And if so, you know, what are your thoughts on this one relative to that, or just this one in general?
No, I haven't read the book or seen the original. I really didn't know anything about it. My daughter and I watched it together, and she enjoyed it. She kind of reacted the way that a kid should react to this movie. For me, you know, this movie is all Anne Hathaway all the time. You know, I mean, Octavia Spencer is, you know, obviously a great actress, and she carries her part well, but Anne Hathaway chewing the scenery is the highlight of this movie. And after that, it just, you know, it's PG, and it feels every bit of PG. You know?
Yeah.
Very.
The witch, first of all, the witches, the whole big thing, their big scene is they're having a meeting. They don't do anything until, you know, they the one thing that they do that gives them any kind of menace is they turn the fat kid into a mouse, and then she discovers the black kid and he turned him into a mouse, et cetera, et cetera.
And
yeah, the bit with
the
bit with the arms where she's reaching for them in the vent, that was really creepy. But then that's kind of it. that's the high point of the movie, because then after that, it's all about the mouse trying to pour the potion into the pea soup, and then you have the final confrontation where they take care of her pretty fast. I thought this was like a weirdly paced movie, and I don't think they give the witches enough to do. It just feels like a stupid kids film.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's a real problem with not having the other witches do anything. Whether that's even in just flashback where Octavia Spencer is giving the history of witches, so there may not be any content. Because the only one we get is a bit of her backstory when she saw her best friend turned into a chicken by Anne Hathaway.
Can we all agree that before the CGI goes too crazy, when the kid starts screaming and then turning and starts clucking, that was scary.
For a PG movie, yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like for a movie called The Witches, they don't really do a lot with the witches.
It could be worse. In the book, there's an entire chapter where the Grand High Witch gives the recipe for delayed action Formula 86 mouse maker.
In the 90s movie, do they do more?
Yeah, there's a bit more. There's a whole scene where they chase the kid after they discover him. And chase him back into his room where his grandmother's passed out at the moment because she's diabetic, I seem to recall.
Yeah, she had pneumonia in the books.
Yeah, that's why they were going on vacation there for the climate to be a little bit easier on her lungs.
Because they had originally planned on a trip to
Norway. Because his grandmother's Norwegian.
Mm-hmm. I thought the movie, as far as setting, looks nice. And, you know, the costumes were interesting. You talked about the CGI. The CGI is, you know, it was clear this was meant to be seen on the big screen in 3D. But, yeah, when it was over, I was like, all right, I guess I got to talk about this now. Like, I didn't think the movie was any big deal. That's really all I have to say about it.
No, it just kind of exists. And it's not bad. It's not great. It's a... You know, there's that old bit from Sesame Street where Oscar the Grouch incites almost violence between Siskel and Ebert by saying, you know, you guys have thumbs up and thumbs down, but why don't you have a thumb in the middle? And one of them goes, that's ridiculous, this is a binary equation, we give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and the other one goes, well, hang on just a second, I can think of a lot of great thumb in the middle movies. And then they kind of fade out from that at the movie set with those two arguing and Oscar the Grouch kind of smirking at the camera. This is a perfectly serviceable thumb-in-the-middle movie.
All right, you ready to do the money?
Alexis, if you have any other final thoughts.
It is a thumb-in-the-middle movie, but I would also say this is a movie that I think both adults and kids will enjoy. It's not going to be one that they're going to say, put it back on, I want to watch again. But it does, again, Anne Hathaway chewing the scenery and Octavia Spencer and Stanley Tucci as the hotel manager all give really good performances. And I think younger kids are going to get a kick out of it. So I would say this is probably one of the better family films that we've seen so far in 2020.
That's probably about accurate.
All right, here we go.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
All right, we have no idea how much this movie made because it got released directly to HBO Max. However, we do have worldwide box offices, and something called The 800 is currently at $460 million. Bad Boys for Life, $426 million. Tenet has risen all the way to $341 million, and I guess the reason why a lot of studios just abandoned 2020 was they looked at Tenet as sort of the canary in the coal mine and said, yeah, people aren't going to the movies. Some theaters aren't even open yet in some quarters. And said, screw it. So, that's Tenet. Sonic the Hedgehog, 308. Doolittle, 245. Birds of Prey, 201. Legend of Deification, 163. Onward, 141. The Invisible Man, 130. And at number 10, Call of the Wild. And hey, Mulan, who did get a theatrical release in other parts of the world, worldwide has a $66 million take.
I laugh at your $200+ million movie.
Another one that we reviewed earlier this year, The New Mutants, is at 44.
Ow.
It doesn't even deserve that.
And everything else is just nothing.
A wasteland.
Robert, anything going on in the world of movies and box office that's worth talking about?
Wasn't it Regal Cinemas that shut down very recently?
And AMC may be going bankrupt by the end of the year.
Yeah, I imagine Amazon will go through with their plan to buy out about the time they declare bankruptcy. The movie theaters around my neck of the woods are open. They're just doing a lot more limited showings.
Mm-hmm. That's part of why we canceled The Empty Man. I wasn't up to going out to the movies on Sunday, and then so that left today or tomorrow to go see it. And the only showings on the weekdays are at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, the only one I would have gone to was 6:30 my time.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been yesterday that we saw it and then just reviewed it today. But I don't think anything of value was lost. Look, you and I both read the 8-volume limited run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I saw the trailer and went, so you took the only possibly interesting element of this story and just tossed it away in favor of making it a crappy urban legend? No.
It is really weird trying to think about this movie season. I get an Entertainment Weekly subscription gift from my late grandmother. God bless your Grandma Jo, you're awesome. And the latest one, which has got Jennifer Hudson on the cover talking about how she's going to play Aretha Franklin in an upcoming biopic, but P.S., good casting. It's got a thing on talking about the Oscar race beginning, and I'm just sitting going, what race?
Yeah, there's no race. There's not even really going to be a telecast. I think they announced that this last week. There's not going to be a telecast for the Oscars.
Well, they can't put all of their big name celebrities in one place.
And if they can't all get camera time, then what's the point, right?
Well, let's face it. That's the main reason people watch the Oscars. They want to see their favorite actors in pretty dresses.
I just read the results occasionally at this point. A couple of years ago, I just got fed up with the self-indulgent nature of that whole thing. It's a huge self-congratulatory, masturbatory fest.
My husband and I watch the Oscars every year, but that was one of our earliest dates when we first started seeing each other, so it's kind of a tradition for us.
I get it, and you know, plenty of people do watch it as part of a tradition. I wound up tapping out. I would read results, decide whether or not I agreed with them, but watching the broadcast became just a tedious affair. So, I don't know what the Oscars are going to look like this year in terms of... because they're still going to, I assume, at least have the awards to one degree or another. I don't know if they're... I don't know what the potential ceremony will look like or whatnot, but...
I can just imagine shipping the Oscar to Christopher Nolan. It's like, here, you know, you're the only one who made anything decent this year. Knock yourself out.
I'd imagine Netflix... there's a lot of Netflix movies that are going to be nominated or win awards.
I can't imagine what they'd be, though. I've looked through the Netflix offering from 2020.
It's hilarious how many film companies actually fought for the last couple of years to keep Netflix movies out of the Oscars. I think they were trying to force Netflix movies into the Emmys. And everyone was saying, no, that it's like these movies were still getting a film festival release before they went to Netflix, so it still counts.
Yeah,
now it's like, if we didn't have Netflix, we'd be screwed.
I agree that Nolan's the only one who made anything any good this year. And to be fair, you could have easily given him the one for Dunkirk. I'm a little bit more on the toss-up between Dunkirk and Shape of Water than a lot of people. A lot of people are just... hands down that Shape of Water is better. It's not as clear to me that it's that much. I don't object to it winning, and you know, Lord knows Guillermo del Toro had been snubbed a couple of times for his work, and him finally getting it was very, very well deserved.
Yeah, I saw both, but honestly, I'm kind of biased because obviously I'm going to prefer Guillermo del Toro's style of films, and I'm not crazy on war films, but that's just me. It's like, I acknowledge the that Dunkirk is an amazing movie, but it's not my kind of thing. So when you talk about which one's better, I'm like, I'm not going to give you a fair answer.
So the worldwide box office kind of is what it is. It's a wasteland. That's all that's going to... And now, you know, most studios are just desperately pushing back stuff, and in about 8 more months, they're all going to be tripping over their own dicks. Because I've mentioned this before, there's a giant domino effect that's going to happen for a bunch of these studios, where they're either going to wind up releasing their own films against each other, or they're just going to wind up trying to shove everything back even further. And I think that's probably not going to be a very pleasant scenario to try and live through either way.
Yeah, Ghostbusters was pushed back to March, and now it's been pushed back to June. Warner Brothers did a big reshuffling of their movies. We're all waiting for the day that Wonder Woman gets pushed to next year.
Currently
it's holding its date at Christmas, but that doesn't mean anything.
I mean, they already shot the stupid movie. They do kind of have to release it, even though it's... Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, critics. They're even more insufferable than usual.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Ashley D. Stevens of Salon.com, top critic.
Oh. God, I hate that publication so much. It's terrible.
While Dahl's books and Zemeckis' adaptation may feel a touch too dark for some, consider that it's actually shining a light into the shadows.
Get bent. Oh, it's...
I don't get the point of that review. It's like, wait, is that positive? Is that negative? I don't get what they're going for.
Moreover... I don't know. Trying to claim that this adaptation is a bit too dark. I'm sorry, are you weaning your children only on Disney movies? Come on. And
yeah.
Even then, you'd have to be very selective because I got some news for you about how some of those go.
Yeah, again, go look at the 90s adaptation with the practical effects. The scene of Bruno turning into a mouse is freaking terrifying.
Yeah, that transformation's a lot scarier in the... It's a lot more body horror in the 90s adaptation.
Yeah, I think you can credit that movie for starting my fear of body horror.
Ty Burr of the Boston Globe, top critic.
Ugh.
The witches become scary in new and not always fruitful ways. It's rated PG, but trust me, it'll give younger kids just screamy memes.
No? Your children must be giant wusses, buddy. There's nothing all that scary here. Look, there's the one somewhat intense sequence where they're running through an air vent. That's kind of it.
There's a couple of scenes that I think might frighten some of the younger viewers. Again, the scene of Alice Blue turning into the chicken, the close-up scenes of the witches with their mouths open showing all their teeth. Things like that are, you know, going... I think will scare the younger kids. But again, we grew up on the 90s version with the body horror and Jim Henson effects. So, you know, we're kind of looking at this going, oh, you kids got it too easy. We got the stuff that put us into therapy.
Jeffrey M. Anderson of the San Francisco Examiner. If you've seen Hocus Pocus one too many times and Hubie Halloween is just a little too dumb, then Robert Zemeckis' The Witches, based on the classic Roald Dahl novel, offers slick, bright fun and just on the edge of spooky.
That's probably about fair.
No, so that's not bad.
I feel... Let me just say this. I feel bad for this poor gentleman that he reviewed or saw Hubie Halloween. Because anyone subjected to Adam Sandler, any of Adam Sandler's work post about 2008 is just, you're either a masochist or you work for sadists.
Peter Travers of ABC News. The British author's wickedly twisted children's book. Jesus Christ. Alexa, stop. Alexa, stop.
With 1 week left to go before Election Day, Americans are voting.
Sorry.
What the hell was that?
He said NBC. He said ABC News or whatnot, and his Alexa heard, oh, you would like the news. That might be the first time it's done that without someone saying Alexis and it mishearing.
I know!
Tick two. Peter Travers, ABC News. The British author's wickedly twisted children's book is transferred to the Deep South in the 1960s to provide a racial diversity meant to speak to a 2020 audience with a pertinent understatement that is otherwise in short supply.
Eh. Feels like you're needlessly posturing as a reviewer to try and shoehorn that point in.
Again, there's one scene. Well, yeah, maybe in the half, if you count the scene where she's handing out the money to all the staff members.
I just, you know, can I just, honestly, it was refreshing that they didn't make a big deal out of that. Maybe it's because we just watched Lovecraft Country and I was really beat over the head with a similar time frame and following black characters. But it was nice to see them not make a big deal out of the fact that we're following black characters, so...
I figured they'd just change it because they had an opportunity to cast Octavia Spencer, and who the hell would turn down Octavia Spencer?
Yeah, it... This is the kind of alteration to the source material that I don't care about because it's not a thing that matters to the original material. You know, there's not a big deal... The novel works within the setting because Dahl sets all of his stuff in England. But shifting it to America or, you know, Australia, Canada, you could set this story wherever you want and not really change much of anything. So changing it around doesn't mean anything in the sense that it alters the story, so have at it. Play around with it.
All right, last one. Emmanuel Nolset of the Movie Blog. Anne Hathaway is the main draw in this beat-for-beat remake. It's oddly disturbing for young kids, but still entertaining.
I'd argue this is not a beat-for-beat remake.
It's not a remake.
Yeah.
We had this argument on the network Messenger chat. It's a new adaptation. It's not a remake of the Angelica Houston film.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have kids, so I can't speak to whether or not it will scare any of them, but I don't know. Mark, you said your daughter kind of enjoyed it. Was she, you know, scared at all?
I mean, she gets scared over everything, so she's not a great judge.
Fair enough.
She watched the whole thing, so.
Yeah, I was gonna say, were there any scenes where she closed her eyes or looked away from the TV or said, you know, tell me when this is over?
No, not really.
Okay, there you go. That's the kind of stuff that I did when I got scared as a kid.
All right, folks, that wraps up our review of The Witches. Alexis Haina and I will be back at the end of the week to do Craft Legacy, which is the 2020 sequel to the original Craft. We've also got Danzig Sings Elvis, and... we'll be looking at the Halloween Havoc edition of NXT this Friday. So, Robert, what do you got going on?
Well, this last Saturday, early in the morning, I covered UFC 254. You can find my full report for that if you're interested in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania. And I host the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast. This week, I took a look at the fights from Saturday, previewed this upcoming set, because Halloween there will be an event, so if you want to check, if you're too busy handing out candy to little kids to, you know, watch the fights yourself, feel free to stop by. We'll have you updated on what is supposed to be Anderson Silva's final fight in the UFC. That's according to both Silva and UFC president Dana White. And given that the man is 45 years old and just 1-4 in his last 5 fights, I tend to think it's beyond time he retire. This particular episode of the podcast also spent a lot of time talking about Khabib Nurmagomedov, because he retired after submitting Justin Gaethje in a round and in 6 minutes. Wasn't even a round and a half. And yeah, so I talk about him, a little bit about his legacy and whatnot. So feel free to tune in for that. If you're interested in professional wrestling, Fridays I cover WWE SmackDown in the Wrestling Zone of 411 Mania. So you're welcome to stop by and get my take on something I don't care all that much about. It's a good time had by all, I assume. Except people who actually watch the show, because yeesh. Okay, the last episode was pretty solid, actually. And yeah, we've, you know, our schedule here is constantly updating and evolving, but Mark, you and I will be back. We got a couple of things in November, I seem to recall.
Yeah, we got the election podcast.
Yeah, that's the big one. So just about a week and a half out, a couple of weeks. Mark,
I'd get it over with.
Yeah, let's just swear Trump back in and be done with it. I say that deliberately to poke at people. Come, I don't actually have a dog in that particular hunt at the moment. I haven't voted yet. I've got my ballot here. I don't know. There's several issues I'm still researching actually on my local ballot. That's kind of why that hasn't happened yet, because your local elections matter so much more than the federal one, than the national one for the presidency. Come on, people. The president doesn't wield that much power. We ascribe entirely too much to that office, and I don't know why. Anyway, Mark, Andrew, yeah,
because,
Graham, and I,
because those who paid it, who tuned in to listen to us talk about the witches, really want to hear us talk about politics.
No, that's just a general bit of advice for people out there, that if you're in a democratic system, what you do locally just matters more than what you do nationally. That's just kind of the way it is and the way it should be, in my opinion. But that's the extent of it. We don't talk a lot of politics here because we figure you guys don't come to us for that. So if you want to spend election night with people who are just having a good time, kicking things around, Mark, Andrew, Graham, and I will be talking about it. Take a break from the horribly, horribly overpaid talking heads on your major news networks. They all suck anyway. Hang out with us. We have a good time. We had a good time in 16, at least, despite every single major network not having the balls to actually announce the end of the election until about 20 minutes after we were done recording, and we were recording for, what, 3.5 hours? It was a long one. So, tune in for that. Well, we will have you covered on election night. And then, you know, we just posted the updated schedule over on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network Facebook page, so take a look at that. See what you're potentially interested in that's coming up. It's always a good time. Unless we're talking about Danzig singing Elvis, and then, oh boy. Not a good time.
All right, Alexis, go ahead and do your plugs.
All right, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. Like I mentioned in our last show, we've just added a bunch of brand new products to the store, some brand new Monopoly and Clue charm bracelets. Monopoly Clue token charm bracelets. Blah, that's the word I was looking for. We're going to be adding a few more things here in the next couple of weeks, because even though we are right around the corner from Halloween and it is my favorite holiday, when you run your own business, you kind of have to focus on the holidays, and we are less than 100 days away from Christmas, so I am working my butt off to get things ready to go for that. Of course, a reminder, starting next month, we will be doing our big Black Friday sale, and those of you who are new to our store, every year, every sale that we get from Black Friday all the way to Christmas Day, for every order that we get, we will be donating $5 to Children's Mercy Hospital. It's part of our annual charity drive. We do it every year. Really excited to be doing it again this year. So be sure to stop by our stores at Etsy and Handmade at Amazon. And as always, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Under Duress Twitter. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us here on Damn You Hollywood. For Alexis Haina and Robert Winfrey, I'm Mark Radulich. Be well, be safe, and behave.